Your 702 Weekend Breakfast with me, Gugs Mhlongom, and we're talking about the future of our data, specifically our data privacy, data security, and whether the hackers are a lot smarter than, say, our security systems are. Did you this week get a notification, either from your phone, perhaps your email server, that some of your passwords had been compromised? Are you worried about how safe your data is, the stuff on your phone, your banking apps, the information? Because so much of our information is on the internet or is connected to the internet. Are you worried about how safe that information is? Give us a call on 011-883-0702. Send us an SMS on 31702 or your WhatsApp messages and your voice notes on 0727021702. Joining us to talk about the future of how safe our data is, we're joined by editor-at-large at MyBroadband. He's a good friend of the show. His name is Jan van Meulen. Jan, as always, good to have you on the show. Good morning.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
So, Jan, I get this message from my iPhone security saying I need to change some of my passwords. They have been compromised. They appeared in a breach, which sounds pretty scary. What happens when your personal information, like your passwords, appear in a breach? What is a data breach?
So data breaches can be different things. The kind of notification you got, that's really cool. It sounds like whatever notification service you have there is plugged into a system called Have I Been Pwned. It's literally, as you say it, Have I Been, and then Owned, but spelled with a P, pwned.com.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a system operated by an Australian guy called Troy Hunt, who essentially fell into the task of tracking data breaches all over the world and then notifying people in as far as he can, you know, if there's an email address associated with a breach, when the password has been compromised. And that system has now got more and more sophisticated so that even without an email address, someone like you via Apple, via iPhone, can get a notification like that. So what the data breaches we're talking about here is usually some kind of authentic, like login credentials database. So the most common is a list of email addresses, and then what they call salted and hashed passwords. What that means is it's your password, but not in a human readable format. It is mussed up a little, your password, so that hackers, if they breach this database, then they don't just have your password immediately. There's still like several steps, hours and hours and hours of number crunching if you've chosen a strong password before they get a usable password back off of a list of hashed and salted passwords. And so that's the most common form of a data breach like this. But you also get really bad breaches or bad security practices where companies store people's usernames and passwords in a plain text format. So in other words, if the hacker breaks in and they steal the login credentials of all the users on that service, they also now have all those passwords. And where that's particularly dangerous is if people have reused passwords on different services.
Mm-hmm.
So if you use the same password on Twitter, your banking app, your Gmail, and an attacker breaches one of those services, and they get the usernames and passwords on one of them, then the first thing they do is they try that username and password everywhere to see if they can get in.
Uh-huh.
And if you've reused the password somewhere, then they can get in that way. Brief summary of what these data breaches are and what they mean for us as consumers at the end of the day.
So one of the big ones that happened this week was at the Home Depot, which is an American company. It seems what happened was the personal data of about 22,000 employees had been stolen. AT&T also announced that they'd been a victim to a data breach. And those are pretty big companies. I mean, AT&T is arguably one of the biggest telecoms companies on the planet. Is it that hackers or people who do these data leaks / breaches are becoming a lot smarter and sophisticated? And if AT&T can have a data leak or a breach, what chance does, you know, do you and I stand?
Right, yeah. So exactly, AT&T getting breached is a little bit like Vodacom getting breached. It's a huge deal. Vodacom operates all over the continent. So you know, the whole of Vodacom Group gets breached. That's huge. And it's partly what you said. The attackers are getting more sophisticated. Now, we don't yet know who got into AT&T, but what we are seeing globally is that the type of attacker that companies have to fend off on is not the type of attacker from 10 years ago. So, you know, 10 years ago, you were maybe dealing with opportunistic hackers or script kiddies, someone trying to get a quick payday, ransomware gangs, that sort of thing. Ransomware gangs are still around, but nowadays, these big corporations have to fight off literal countries, nation-state-backed hackers, because the cybersecurity domain, the cyber domain, has become a theater of war. It's become a place where countries are essentially attacking one another, and it's an attractive one because it's not a declaration of war. So if you look at any other theater of war, so if you look at and if you can count space amongst that if you want, but if you look at air, land, or sea, if you attack someone on air, land, or sea, that is an act of war and an immediate declaration of war. If you do that in the cyber domain, it's not. And there's all kinds of plausible deniability. You know, if a Russian state-sponsored hacker breaches a American tech company, mm-hmm. or a Chinese tech company, the country can say, no, we have nothing to do with those guys. There's a lot of that happening. And that stuff also has been, this is not particularly new, but it's ramped up in recent years significantly. And to put this in context, for example, over 10 years ago, the Americans and it's suspected, let's phrase it that way, that the Americans and Israelis wrote a virus, a worm called Stuxnet, that was designed specifically to infect Iranian nuclear refinement facilities. It was designed to destroy Iran's ability to make nuclear weapons. And that was sort of one of the very first instances where I sat up and went, oh, wow, cyber has become a theater of war, and this is how this is how conflicts are going to be fought in the future. So we're seeing a lot of that. Some of these breaches are collateral damage, but some of them are targeted. The point is to gather as much information about your adversary as you can. And, telecoms companies and other major corporations are great sources of data. They've not treated people's personal data with respect, and that's why we have laws like the GDPR in the EU and POPIA here in South Africa, because companies were just harvesting people's private information, you know, thinking that one day, you know, big data, the promise of big data, they'll be able to turn that into revenue somehow. But now that those huge volumes of data have also painted a target on their backs for cyber criminals like these and for nation state actors who are trying to get information about people globally for whatever reason, for whatever the reason is that week. So, that's part of it. And what chance do we as individuals stand? Mm. Like there's, I think all of us have, our login credentials have been the subject of some sort of breach. If you go to email address to haveibeenpwned.com right now and type it in, it's incredibly likely that your credentials have been in some kind of breach. And so it's not about preventing an attack or fighting back against an attack. That's the one difference between the cyber domain as a theater of war and others, is when you are attacked in the form of a cyber attack or suffer a data breach or something, no one is hurt immediately. You don't have to try to block an attack. but you need to have mechanisms in place to ensure that if you are attacked, that the damage is limited. And that's why security professionals have been preaching the security hygiene for years and years and years. Don't reuse passwords. Use strong passwords. Use passphrases if you can. Use two-factor authentication. All of those things, while it sounds boring and repetitive and people are tired of hearing it, the reason that security professionals have been harping on this is precisely because of the situation we're in today.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm very guilty of reusing passwords because, you know, the really strong passwords are hard to remember. And after this week, I've had to reconsider my decisions because one of the passwords that was compromised in this data leak is one of my favorite ones. It's one I use all the time. And I think, as you say, it's why people have said, don't use the same password for things, because if it then leaks, it not only puts at risk the one thing, but everything else that uses that password. So I now have quite a number of passwords to change because I've just been so lazy to change this particular password, which is awful. And now there's been a data leak.
But exactly. And this is what password managers are for. Now, password managers are not a silver bullet. LastPass, for example, was breached last year. It was breached twice before. And so even password managers aren't 100% safe. But the alternative is to write down all of your passwords on a piece of paper, which is nothing wrong with that, by the way. But the problem is if you forget your piece of paper at home for the day and you're at the office, then now you can't log into stuff. And so choose a password manager that you think is trustworthy. And there's plenty of them on the market. Bitwarden is a great option. And LastPass, despite the breaches, is doing much better. One Password, KeePass. You can use your built-in password managers that come with your phone.
Yes, I use Android. The iPhone one.
It's a great option, and it works between Mac and iPhone. It does. The only reason I don't use it is because I use Windows sometimes, and so that's a great option. And those tools come with password generators, and so you can just whenever you need a password, you generate it, you use it, and then your password manager remembers it. You don't have to remember it. And so that's what makes them great.
Yeah. We have a question. We have Madete on the line to us from Sandton. Madete, a very good morning to you.
Yes, good morning. Good morning.
Good morning. What is your question?
Listen, I'm just, it's more of a concern because I know security is a very subjective thing. It's only how much they want you. But it's more of the domineering, the dominant character that's going over everything. Number one, now one of my banks is using Google Pay predominantly everywhere. Number two, their control over browsers and the standards around that. And I say that because one of my clients' website has now been completely blacklisted by Google because some hackers had overtaken it. So Google has now decided on its own that we cannot use that that domain anymore. So what I'm basically saying is Google seems to be taking over everything and eventually is going to be determining what we do and don't do online. So is that not a concern for our local authorities or whoever is responsible for, you know, overseeing those concerns?
Jan?
Yes. Cool. I think I caught the gist of it. The line cut out a little bit. But yeah, this is tangential to our security discussion. But what the caller raised there was Google. People often see this. When you're in Chrome or when you Google something and a website result comes up, there's often a warning where it says, be careful, this seems to be an attack site. And it sounds like what happened in this person's case is a client's website was compromised and hackers uploaded the malicious scripts to that website. And then unfortunately, when Google detects that, they do put warnings out. And so this is now an interesting one, because from the caller's perspective, this is Google being prescriptive and blocking his client's revenue. It's essentially taking money out of his mouth and money out of his client's mouth, right? Or food out of his mouth and food out of his client's mouth. But from Google's perspective and from lawmakers' perspective and stuff, so Google is a dominant player in the online space. There's just no bones about it. They have the biggest browser in Chrome. And by the way, it didn't always used to be that way. Chrome became the biggest browser because it was the best. Whether it's still the best is up for debate. But it used to be dominated by Microsoft Internet Explorer, which was a rubbish browser. But the only reason people used it is because it came by default with Windows. And so Google started this revolution where people were actually willing to download a new browser in Chrome and start using that rather than Internet Explorer. It really helped fix problems with web standards. But now it's got itself into a position where it's the dominant player. And now the question is, does that come with a responsibility to warn people when it detects an attack site, when its systems flag a site as potentially, malicious, for whatever reason? And often it happens like what this caller describes, where an attacker breaks into a site and they upload malicious scripts to. So no one's going to visit, attacksite.com or I will steal all your banking details.net.
Yeah.
Right? What they'll do is they'll go to their regular websites and so the attackers try to break into those regular websites and upload malicious tools, malicious scripts to those sites to harvest credentials or do other, infect people with viruses, whatever the case might be. And so so Google warns people about that. But there's mechanisms to get your site off that blacklist. So once you've secured your site, you can then contact Google and say, hey, listen, my site was hacked. We have taken these and these steps, corrective action, and the site should be fine now. So please take us off the blacklist.
Yeah.
It's not ideal for someone in this caller's shoes, but I also have empathy for Google, who, if they didn't do this, the U.S. lawmakers would be on their back so fast, going, "You are the dominant browser provider. You are the dominant search provider. Why are you not doing more to warn people about attack sites?" Mm-hmm. They're in a catch-22.
Yeah. And so, Jan, does this mean then that what we've seen this week, the data leaks, the data breaches, my password manager on my phone telling me that my passwords have been compromised, is that then just the way things are going to be as, more of our lives are online, as, I don't know if our phones can get any smarter, but as we use technology in the way that we do?
Yes, unfortunately. And so what's going to happen in our modern lives is people are going to have to essentially learn how to respond to breaches like this. So and the company, so in your case, Apple, has to be careful about how it communicates it, because it mustn't chase people away from the password manager. So it mustn't be like, oh, no, Google, Apple's password manager has lost my passwords. They must make it incredibly clear that, hey, listen, it is this third-party site that was compromised. We detected it. We're the heroes in this. We are notifying you that your password is potentially compromised and should change it. Just so that people don't get the wrong idea when they get these breach notifications from their password manager and think that it's a password manager that's the problem. The direct answer to your question is, unfortunately, this is going to happen more frequently. And I think what's essentially going to happen is that we as consumers on average are going to get smarter about internet security. More people are going to use two-factor authentication and pass keys and that sort of thing. The hand in hand with that is going to be breach notifications, where it's just kind of second nature, to people. You go, I've received a breach notification from, this service, Let me just change the password quick. Mm-hmm. And changing the password quick will be as simple as tapping and then generating a new password and saving that new password in the password manager and done. It's not going to be the traumatic experience that it is today.
And for platforms or companies that currently have websites, is there going to be a bit of a focus on for them on better security? Because I imagine as these become, I guess, more normal, more commonplace or more expected, is there then, I guess, a shift for them in terms of design? Because I imagine currently the focus is on user experience, but great user experience doesn't always mean the most secure thing.
Yes, I hope so. And in particular in South Africa, where security has kind of been ignored. It's been on the back burner, especially small businesses. And once again, I empathize with small businesses because it's just another massive cost of doing business. But if you do business online, then you have to consider cybersecurity, and you have to consider the people's private data that you have taken custody over. So you've got to protect that stuff properly. And now you are by law compelled to. POPIA says you have to, and if you don't, and if it comes out that you were negligent, then you can face huge fines. Like 10 million rand fines, jail time potentially. That's that part of the question. Sorry, I missed the second part of your question.
No, I was just saying, so companies are then going to, it sounds as though security is going to be a lot more, or potentially as important,
right,
or a lot more important than user friendliness,
the experience.
User experience. Yeah.
Yes. So what we're seeing there is a move from companies once again to kind of straddle this line between user experience and security. There's a big push from companies like Microsoft and I think Apple and Google towards a thing called pass keys. And so this is where essentially your password is, you no longer remember passwords. You store pass keys in your mobile device or in your password manager that's shared between your devices, your laptop, your tablet, and your smartphone. Rather than making people remember a username and password, or email and password combination, there's this switch toward pass keys to kind of take the password out of the equation entirely. And that's got to do with the fact that people are still to this day in the year of our Lord 2024 setting weak passwords. Password 123, 12345, or some people are clever and so they hold down shift. And then they go down the keyboard and they go, exclamation QAZ at WSX hash EDC. Those don't help.
Yeah.
The hackers know those tricks. And so to just kind of go, okay, we're going to stop dealing with weak passwords and with password reuse. And so we're going to force people into using pass keys. So what a security conscious individual like me doesn't like about that is it kind of takes away my choice to go, no, but I want a username and password with two-factor authentication rather than a single pass key, because the pass key is essentially the same as the second factor of authentication we use nowadays. It's like a rotating code you get on your phone. It's like a one-time PIN that you used to be SMS,
mm-hmm.
Except it's generated on your phone. That's the trade-off. That these big companies, the Microsofts and the Googles, have to make.
Yeah.
Because to deal with the problem of weak passwords and password reuse, they're going to pass keys. And that's to kind of try and keep it user friendly but still secure.
Jan, as always, it's great to have you on the show. Thank you so much for joining us this morning. Interesting as always.
My pleasure. Have a great day further.
Thank you so much. That is Jan van Meulen. He is editor-at-large at MyBroadband, speaking to us about the future of our collective data security and the privacy of our data. Of course, this week, news coming out of the US of some data breaches at two major companies. You may have also been aware of them as well.